Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused kids with truth and love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their sense of gender identity. But in no other area of education, medicine, or psychology is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan the best thing for every person. We believe that every child is an individual and should be given the care and treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And Maria, what are we talking about today?
Well, you might see I have a new background. I decided to download a Zoom background that has some books in it, because today we're going to talk about books. There's a new genre out there of trans YA, young adult, trans lit, not just YA. It runs the gamut from, you know, board books for preschoolers, you know, all the way up to adult books. More than a few years ago now, werewolves and vampires were all the rage. After the Twilight series came out, Stephanie Miller's books, everybody was parroting those, and we had all these vampires and werewolves. And I remember thinking, I can't wait till we're done with werewolves and vampires. Mm-hmm. And now it's translit. That's what's on the market. I never thought I'd want to go back to vampires and werewolves, but they seem almost quaint compared to what's going on today.
Yeah, it really is shocking. And I just wanted to briefly show this book. This is a book that was sent to me free, that they will send to anybody, but they're targeting children to send it to. And basically what it is it's a book written for boys to talk about magically becoming a girl and it really talks about, you know, drinking potions and casting magical spells in order to become a girl, because everybody knows that the boys deserve to be princesses at the ball. And it really, it's, first of all, it's incredibly badly written, Maria. It's just, it's painful to read through, but it also just has this message over and over again. These are all short stories. And in each one, it's a boy who wants to be a girl and somehow, magically becomes a girl, even if everybody else doesn't know the truth. And in the end, generally, they find, you know, everybody accepts them and they realize that, oh my gosh, they've been wrong all this time. The doctors were wrong. The parents were wrong. And it really promotes this idea of taking potions, which, as we know, is estrogen, puberty blockers. And it really, I mean, I think the target audience for this book is probably tweens, prepubescent boys, and specifically boys. And so, you know, this is so concerning to me that they're targeting kids and they're sending free books out to them. This is just a tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, the books are coming into libraries and classrooms. And you talked about how badly written that book was. I've seen some really bad writing. Last year, one of the middle schools in our district sent out their summer reading list. And almost 25%, I think it was 7 out of 30 of the books that were recommended, revolved around sex and gender. I mean, just explicitly sex and gender. And my organization, Arlington Parent Coalition, put out our own reading list. We're like, here's a better reading list with some classics and modern books that are more safe. One of the teachers at this middle school just was furious. She emailed us and said that we had put down these books and we hadn't even read them. So I'm like, fair enough, I should read. So I grabbed, it was, I've got the title of it. Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe. This was on the summer reading list in Arlington Public Schools. So I downloaded the free sample that you can get from Amazon, and it was like 25 pages or so. I read the first 20 pages and I'm like, this is awful. This is horrible writing. It was this stream of consciousness diatribe peppered with all this, the narrators, what they wanted to tell you. Well, everybody knows that sex and gender aren't the same thing. And I mean, it was just awful. It broke every rule of fiction. Now, so I wrote back to the teacher and I told her that. I'm like, as an English teacher, what do you find to recommend about this book? Yeah. And it is, there's a lot of really bad writing out there. But the book that I brought to show everybody today is this one. I can't, I'm going to keep it right in front of me because it's magic. 99%
chance. Oh, maybe you're transgender, Maria, and you have magical abilities.
I'm still trying to make the Zoom background work. But I found this book on my bookshelf here at home. And it's got a teacher's name on it. And I discovered this came home from my daughter's seventh grade English classroom, and it's been sitting on our shelf. And I didn't look at it for a couple of years. And then I picked it up and I started looking at it. I'm like, this is one of those. It's one of those trans lit books. And so I posted about it on Facebook, and a friend of mine who's an English teacher said, you know, this book was really important to one of my students. So again, I'm like, okay, I'm going to read it before I critique it. So I finished reading it. It's well written. The author, David Levithan, he's a good writer. Yeah. The story is interesting. It's compelling. He has a beautiful language. He has beautiful metaphors. He's a good writer. But the whole book really serves as nothing but a vehicle for gay and trans propaganda. Yeah. The premise of the story is that there's this person who you find out the narrator's name is A, just like the letter A, and the narrator wakes up every day in a different body. Wakes up in the morning, is in some person's body, goes to sleep at night, gets transferred to another person's body. Always the same age as the narrator. It's been going on the narrator's entire life, which raises some issues that aren't really resolved very well in the book. And we can talk about those later. But there's no purpose ever given for, like, why does this happen? You know, how did it happen? It reminds me a lot of, do you remember the TV show back in the 80s, Quantum Leap?
Yeah, I don't think I ever watched it, but I understand the concept.
Yeah, oh, I love that show. It was a scientist who was doing some kind of experiments, and he got zapped so that his consciousness went into somebody else's body. But in the show, it happened because something went awry in that person's life, mm-hmm. and he was put there by the universe or whatever to try to resolve that issue. And as soon as he got the person back on track, then he jumped into another life.
Oh, interesting.
But this book, every day, there's no reason. Like, we don't know why it happens. We don't know what it's for. At one point in the book, the A meets a pastor who says that he's met other people like this, and this A is not alone, and there's ways to control it. And then all of a sudden the book ends, and we've never revisited that.
You know, it's interesting because that sounds a lot like a dissociative disorder, that every day you're somebody else. And it seems like it might even be promoting that. And we have talked about borderline personality disorder as well. And that's a, you know, kind of a hallmark, is not having a core sense of self. And it almost seems like a lot of this literature is promoting that as normal and appropriate, rather than as something deeply concerning. It also allows to push this idea that we are a consciousness in a random meat body. And I've heard that term, the meat suit, referring to our body, that the meat suit is just sort of a secondary fluke to our consciousness, and that it's our consciousness that really matters. And our meat bodies are more a hindrance than anything else, which is so interesting, because so much of this narrative is pushed by people who have no kind of spiritual underpinnings. And so it's almost like they're saying that there's this spirit self that can be born into any random body, and that it's our job as a spirit self to kind of force society to understand who we are as our spirit selves, and that our bodies are sometimes a hindrance to that, which is really a very bizarre narrative for people who are pushing it back against sort of fundamental concepts of religion.
It is. And there's a very old heresy called Gnosticism. Mm-hmm. And this plays right into that. It's that what's immaterial, what you can't see is more important than what's material. And it really fits neatly into that. And that's another thing. I really wanted to do this episode because I want parents to be aware of what kids are learning. And every book, every movie, every song, everything is written from a worldview. The author has a worldview and is communicating that through this creative media. Every book has a big idea, and it's not usually explicit, and it's often the subject of explicating literature, is trying to get out what is the author trying to teach you. Like in The Lord of the Rings, it's really all about power and the abuse of power and absolute power. And even the title, The Lord of the Rings, I think most people would say, oh yeah, that refers to Sauron. But if you really think about it, who is the one who mastered the ring? It was Frodo who threw it away and got rid of that evil power. So this is the stuff of literary critique, but every book has that. And when I read this book, and I was trying to kind of think, what is this book's big idea? What is it trying to teach? And I got to it about three quarters of the way through on page 254. And this is what David Levithan writes, and he's writing through the voice of a 16-year-old non-gendered person. There are few things harder than being born in the wrong body. Okay, I take exception to that. I think there's a lot of things.
Well, what does that even mean?
You can't be born in the wrong body.
Yeah.
So there are a few things harder than being born in the wrong body. I had to deal with it a lot when I was growing up, but only for a day. Before I became so adaptable, so acquiescent to the way my life worked, I would resist some of the transitions. I loved having long hair and would resent it when I woke up to find my long hair was gone. There were days I felt like a girl and days I felt like a boy, and those days wouldn't always correspond with the body I was in. I still believed everyone when they said I had to be one or the other. Nobody was telling me a different story, and I was too young to think for myself. I had yet to learn that when it came to gender, I was both and neither. It is an awful thing to be betrayed by your body.
Wow, that is pretty explicit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that message is basically the ideology of the gender industry. Wow.
It is. And there's nothing else in this book that I can point to as a bigger idea than that, as something the author's trying to teach. And in most good literature, the narrator, the main character, the protagonist has kind of two things going on. They've got a goal, an actual explicit stated goal, something they're trying to resolve, but they've also got a psychological or spiritual or inner goal. Mm-hmm. And at some point, the two of those meet. And then the character is changed, hopefully for the better. And that does not exist in this book. The narrator is really just going through life one day at a time, trying to figure out, I would say if she's trying to, he is whatever, is trying to figure out anything, it's why is this happening? What's going on? And that's never resolved.
Yeah, it really is. It's extremely disturbing. And it's happening not just to teens and tweens, but at an incredibly young age. And last night, actually, I was watching a YouTube video, and it was from the show The Doctors, which I'm not super familiar with, but it's basically a group of doctors that talk about issues within society and health issues specifically. And they had a clip from a school board meeting where parents were upset that I Am Jazz was read to a kindergarten class, followed by a child coming out as a different gender. And kids had come home very upset about that. And in this show, the doctors were the main doctor who was being, you know, acting as the authority on this, was suggesting that parents should read I Am Jazz to their child and talk about this even before they start kindergarten so that they're prepared for this if it happens in their classroom. And again, the narrative of I Am Jazz is that it's possible to be born in the wrong body, that the doctors make a mistake, that your parents have made a mistake, and that it's your job to, you know, let them know it by whatever means possible that there's been a mistake made and you're something that you don't appear to be, which is exactly what the message of this book is. Mm-hmm. Basically teaching children not to believe what they've been taught. It undermines all authority from doctors to parents to teachers. And it leaves the kid feeling like they are the authority on everything and that their job is to impose their feelings on the world and make the world accept that rather than to find their place in the world, which is what really needs to happen in order to be healthy and successful. And so it's teaching children, you know, pre-K that, you know, their feelings are more important than reality. If their feelings are not respected, that person is hateful and bigoted, and that their job is to, by any means possible, get the authority figures in their surroundings to accept that. And if the authority figures don't accept them, to cut those ties. And again, that's another thing here. There's even a story in here, Maria, about a wolf who was born in the wrong body, who goes to grandma's house and tries on her clothes when she's out and was caught by grandma trying on her clothes. Again, taking, you know, fairy tales and just, you know, manipulating them to push this agenda. Really disturbing. I can't even describe how confusing it must be to children to be getting this message over and over and over again that they can be born in the wrong body.
Well, and these books are in kids' classrooms. Teachers are bringing them in. Groups are sending them to libraries, sending them to teachers. I've talked to librarians who say they open up their library catalog to buy new books, and the first quarter of it is all of these award-winning books, and they're all this trans agenda stuff. Another troubling thing about this book, about every day, every single adult in this book is a two-dimensional caricature. This is a 16-year-old narrator. She jumps into bodies of 16-year-olds. And so most of the characters are 16-year-olds, but most of the parents and the teachers aren't even mentioned. I don't remember ever seeing a teacher like actually playing a role other than this person going to school. But all of the parents are, they're disinterested, they're disconnected, they're abusive, they're bumbling, they're religious zealots. There were a couple of bodies she jumped into where she said, oh, this person has good parents, but it was given evidence for being good that they like took the kids to a museum on Saturday or took them out to dinner. There's no deep, real relationships with any adults in this book at all. And going back to the thing I mentioned earlier, that this has happened this character's entire life. She has no memory of anything other than jumping into bodies. And early on in the book, I was thinking, how does that work for a baby? And Levithan addresses it. And he said, I should try to find it and read the actual words to you, but I don't have it marked. But he said through the character, but babies don't care who's taking care of them. They just want to be fed. They don't care who's feeding them.
Ah, oh, wow. This person knows nothing about human development.
No. Attachment is enormous for babies. Orphaned babies who are left in cribs and are not attached to an adult, to a single or, you know, close adult, they become brain damaged. They become...
They also develop borderline personality disorder, Maria.
Yeah. Kids, babies need to attach to a single caregiver. If this happened to a person, this person would be mentally unstable, and that's the gentlest way I can put it. If every day this baby's latching onto a different woman's breast.
Or not even, you know, just getting a bottle, because apparently that's all it takes is a bottle. And it's interesting because there was a researcher, and I'm probably not going to be able to remember his name, but he did work on attachment. And he showed that these monkeys would go to this very abrasive wire mama with a bottle. This is a fake mama that he made, and it's wiry and sharp, and it has a bottle. And the monkeys would go over to that and nurse on the bottle to get nourished. But then they would go to a different fake monkey that was made that was soft and plush and cuddly. Mm. And the monkeys would cuddle with the soft, cuddly monkey and then run over, get the nourishment, and then run back to the soft, cuddly fake monkey. And so this is really, I mean, this is historic. We know this has been known for a long time, how important it is for children to be nurtured, not just fed, but nurtured by at least one constant adult. And for this author to suggest that all babies need is to be fed is quite horrifying.
It really is. And he's speaking through, the author is speaking through this 16-year-old genderless narrator, and just putting all this, wisdom and statements of fact in her voice. I keep saying her because in my mind, the character behaves more like a girl. But a lot of the stuff, like I think, no 16-year-old's going to grasp that. No 16-year-old's going to have that experience yet. But this genre, I'm finding multiple books in this genre where the protagonist, the main narrator character, has no gender. Yeah. And this is propaganda. This is propaganda that's being sold to students. My daughter, who picked up this book in her classroom, told me she stopped reading it when she got to the sex scene. She was in seventh grade. This was in her seventh grade English class. And there's a 3-page, really steamy sex scene. Now, they don't actually have sex, but it's quite explicit what's going on. And it's completely inappropriate, I would even say, for high school kids.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember a book that had a profound impact on me when I was a teenager. And it was written by Scott Odell, who wrote Islands of the Blue Dolphin, which is, an iconic book. Wonderful book. This book was called Kathleen, Please Come Home. And it was about a girl who started having sex with a migrant worker, much older, started using drugs and ran away from home. And it had such a profound effect on me because I thought, well, this behavior is perfectly okay then. And I actually ran away from home at one point because I was sort of inspired by this book. Like, well, Kathleen did it, I can do it too. And this book did show the way the mother responded. So there was some empathy about how much this had hurt the mother. But it really, this, Kathleen ended up running away to Mexico. She got pregnant. She was smuggling heroin. All of these things had, sort of kind of glamorized this to me as a young woman, an older teen. And again, it's not to say that children shouldn't read books about these controversial issues, but they do have a profound impact, especially if it sounds like these behaviors are being affirmed and these are appropriate, reasonable activities. In this book, the message is so explicit that being born in the wrong body is something that can happen, that it's a reasonable proposition, and that is so dangerous, I think, to children. And the fact that the teachers and librarians are just, embracing this, and that the books that they're targeting kids, they're sending free books to them. They're often award-winning because these LGBTQAI++ organizations are giving them these awards. And so it's really sculpting the culture. And I guess one of the questions that I have is that we talked about how every book kind of has an agenda. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, how do we decide what books should be in schools? What books should children be exposed to? My personal opinion is that we would expose books that are going to promote healthy and successful behavior.
What I argued when we were talking to that school, to the teacher in the school district here, who, the school put out that really egregious list of books, my argument was, why aren't we looking at noble themes? Why aren't we looking at books that teach about courage, about honor, about truth, about valor? Why aren't we looking at bigger themes? There's no big theme in this one. There's nothing. And when you were talking about what it's glamorizing, in almost every life that this narrator jumped into, she just ran circles around the parents, lied to the parents and skipped school so she could go to the beach for the day. You know, I mean, and there was never really any blowback from that. It really cast the adults as sort of bumbling fools that teenagers can just work around. So I would want to look at books and say, what is the theme? Mm-hmm. What are kids going to take away from this? And I agree, there's nothing wrong with teaching books that have controversial messages, but we need to teach them in context. Right. And something I'm always asking my kids is, what do you think the author wants you to think? What do you think the producer of this movie wants you to think? Because that's what we're not really considering anymore.
And it's interesting because I'm thinking about a book that I read that had, it was probably one of the most influential books that I read when I was in probably seventh, eighth grade. And it was about identity and it was called Black Like Me.
And, oh yeah, I read that too.
The character in the book, I believe it's a true story, mm-hmm. actually was able to change his appearance enough so that he was perceived as a Black man.
Yeah, he took a drug that changed the melanin.
Right.
It's very dangerous. And right. he knew it was dangerous, but he wanted to experience this.
Right. And oh my gosh, Maria, that had such a profound impact on me. The idea that people were treated so differently, it had such a profound, and that's a book about identity, mm-hmm. but it was presented in a way that, first of all, it had an important message. And it really gave us important information. And I think about another book, The Jungle, that I read, you know, that had such a profound impact on me about, you know, how desperate things were back then and how thankful we need to be for what we have now. The books that kids are reading today are basically encouraging them to be victims, to perceive themselves as incapable and incompetent at handling life, to promote dissociative behavior, and not having a, you know, a good sense of self formation. These are really dangerous. These are really encouraging kids to basically be dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm. They are. And if you go to Amazon, I did this morning because I was looking for the title of a specific book that I thought I might mention today. And I typed in transgender YA books, YA being young adult. And page after page after page after page after page, I couldn't even find the book I was looking for. There's so many of them. These have been just written in glut. Yeah. And parents need to be aware of that. This is one of the reasons why I have been saying I don't think public school is a safe place for any child today, because a child cannot go to school for a single day without being confronted with messages about sex and gender. And I don't think it's appropriate. And I don't think these books are healthy. And parents really need to be aware. Look at what your kids are reading. Look what's coming home in their backpacks. A friend of mine, her child has some special needs, has some trauma in the background. And the parent actually told the school, "I don't want my child introduced to these themes." Mm-hmm. And then here comes home in the backpack a book that I've read it's got gay porn in it. Yeah. And the teacher's like, "Oh, I didn't realize this would be a problem." You know, I mean, this is
the explicitness of the sex scenes in the book. I mean, the Kathleen Please Come Home book had sex scenes that were sort of implied. Mm-hmm. Sex scenes that are in books now are incredibly explicit. And again, why would we want, especially young teens, and even younger, we have even, you know, younger children reading books with these very, kind of shocking sex scenes that I think when I was younger, they would have probably appeared in a Playgirl or a Playboy. That's sort of the level of the explicitness that we have now, and now they're in our schools. And so
I am. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I used to devour bodice rippers. Do you know what bodice rippers
are?
Explain
that.
Yeah. They're those paperback novels that you can pick up in the drugstore. They used to be like $3-4 each. Almost all of them have a Fabio in like medieval, I mean, no shirt, of course, but, you know, medieval trousers, and woman with flowing hair and her bosom spilling out, you know, I used to devour those. So when people call me a prude and they're like, you just are scared of sex, whatever, I'm like, I used to devour these. And I realize now they're incredibly unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Those, that genre, the bodice rippers, they're called romance novels, but it's porn for women. And it gives a really, really distorted view of men's and women's relationships. And I've heard men call those rape fantasies. Mm-hmm. And I took exception to that until I really started looking at them. I'm like, they do seem like rape fantasies, because in every one of those books, they're very formulaic. The woman is trying to resist the man, you know, no, Rolf, I will never capitulate to you. Yeah, right there, right there. Right. She, inside, she really wants him, yeah, but she's trying to preserve this image of herself as a good girl. Right. And so, but the man would only hear, no, I said no, but yet he still is coming at her. I don't know why people who are all about consent aren't all over these novels. These are a consent nightmare. Yeah. But I'm bring that up just to say, I know what sex scenes look like. Yeah. And I read one here.
For an eighth grader. You said seventh or eighth grade?
She was in seventh. Yeah. My daughter was in seventh when she quit reading when she got to that point. And I'm really appreciate that she did, but I'm not a prude. I've right. read it.
And I think that that's what's important. And it also, I think that the message is that sex is nothing more than like going and getting an ice cream with someone. Mm-hmm. It's just something fun you do. The repercussions from having sex are much bigger than having an ice cream. And that's where this is like completely minimizing what sex is in a way that is really, it's dangerous for kids because they don't have the cognitive ability to weigh the risks associated with having casual sex. But here they are in school reading books, encouraging it. Not only that, but their teachers are talking about these books. So they have an adult sort of being insinuated into these sex scenes in a way that kind of gives tacit approval and creates sort of a weird dynamic between the children and the adult, suggesting that it's okay for adults to talk about these kinds of explicit sex scenes with children. Again, it's incredibly, you know, these are not books that are going to benefit the children. We have lots of really, really amazing books we can choose from. The fact that we're choosing this, you know, stuff that's dangerous and harmful is shocking. And the fact that there isn't a counterpoint, because I could even see if somebody was like, well, let's read this, but then let's read some really good stories, you know, Grimm's fairy tales, or, you know, some of the really well-written stories, and compare them. Let's do that. And show that these books are just specifically written to push an agenda. The writing itself is terrible, but that they're being published and they're being promoted because of this agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one last thing I wanted to mention about this book, throughout the book, the characters in the book are all hooking up with one another. And it's completely irrespective whether they're boys or girls. It's everybody connecting, hooking up with everybody else, everybody dating everybody else. I mean, and this is what I want to bring up too about the worldview again. This is an implied worldview. The author never says any sexual relationship is acceptable, but that is what's implied in it when boys are dating boys and boys are dating girls and girls are dating girls and everybody is just, it's this breaking down of barriers that anyone is a sexual partner for you and that's okay.
And isn't that interesting? Because another book I read when I was in high school was Brave New World. And it really presented sort of a hookup culture as being a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, that this was part of the dystopia of the society that was presented in the book was this the characters, you know, it was considered rude to say no to anybody sexually. And I believe that 1984 also had a component of that where, you know, the expectation was that you would have sex with whomever wanted you to have sex with. And if you started having exclusive sex partners, that was a problem. And that was part of, you know, profoundly dystopian novels when I was growing up. So it's very interesting that that's been switched around and now it's being promoted as normal and good, really.
And preferable.
And preferable. Yeah, this is just recreation. It's good for you to go enjoy yourself. Again, prioritizing the body as a meat suit that you play with rather than as part of yourself as a person.
Yeah. So I want to encourage parents. I know it's really overwhelming. You do not have time to read every book that your child brings home. I recognize that. I committed a lot of time to reading this one because I was challenged by a friend who felt it was a decent book. You can't do that, but you can look at the title and just put it in Amazon. You know, there's some titles. There's one called Symptoms of Being Human. And it looks like a really innocuous book. It's got a black and white cover, just, you know, but it's one of these translit books. The character, you never find out if the character is a biological boy or a biological girl. So if you just put the title in Amazon or even just in your, and I'm going to suggest DuckDuckGo as a search engine, because we have a good friend of Partners for Ethical Care who really recommends DuckDuckGo as a safer search engine. So put it in your search engine and just see what comes up. You can divine pretty quickly what kind of a book it is and recognize that if it's recent, I'd say if it's been published in the last 6 or 7 years and it's in the YA market and it's award-winning, it's pretty much guaranteed that this is a translit book.
You know, it really does break my heart because I think of some of the just amazing books that I read when I was that age that just, I mean, they were just powerful, really important messages that are just being overlooked now. It's very sad that children are not being exposed to quality literature and that they're being, again, indoctrinated with this ideology that is dangerous. Again, that is where I come down to is, are the messages in the book going to promote health and well-being, or are they going to promote dysfunction and dangerous behaviors? And I think it's pretty clear that, you know, once a kid gets involved in the transgender ideology, they're going to start self-harming their bodies. They're going to start medicalizing. These are kids who are going to have lifelong complications as a result of this ideology. And so it's not promoting health and well-being. It's promoting really dangerous behaviors that are going to end up hurting our society as a whole, but especially hurting that child.
Well, and ostensibly, these books are just helping promote kindness and diversity so that when children meet other people who were born in the wrong body, they'll know to accept them and love them and all that. No, I'm not buying it because of what I read, that thesis that was the main crux of the book. That's what this is about, as you said, indoctrinating kids and getting them to believe this, which is not true.
Boy, this has been a hard one. Again, we say that after a lot of our episodes, these are really difficult things. And as parents, it's gotta be just so incredibly overwhelming. I would encourage if you have the opportunity to homeschool your child to consider that. If not, be vigilant and push back against what the teachers are pushing on your kids. It's our right as parents to go into the schools and say, you know, I'm not okay with my child reading that. It's our right and responsibility. We need to be doing that. And I
know what parents, you know what parents are doing. Parents are taking these books, going to school board meetings and using their 2 or 3 open comment minutes to read from these books. And I've heard of this places where the school board has said, stop, you can't use words like that here in public.
Yep.
This is in my child's, you know, middle school or elementary classroom. So take one of these books to the school board meeting, just read it aloud. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, just let the school board know, let the public know what's in these books. So many parents are busy and they assume that the schools are good, healthy, safe places for their kids. They assume that diversity and tolerance is really about not bullying kids and accepting people. And they don't realize how insidious the gender industry is.
Yeah, Well, thank you. I appreciate you bringing the book that you did.
And I appreciate you spending time reading that book to find, you know, to finally get to the thesis of it and to understand. It's in some ways harder to read a well-written book like that than, you know, I was able to just, this is just so bad.
Yeah, I did. I approached this book with a really prejudiced attitude. But as I got into it, I thought, he's a good writer. I used to write fiction before I started doing what I'm doing with you now. And I know how hard it is to write good fiction, and he's a good writer. But I just kept waiting, like, come on, what am I going to learn? What's going to be the message? What's going to be the culmination? And all of a sudden it ended. And I was kind of looking at it like, where's, did they run out of paper? You know, there's no meaning. Yeah. There's no meaning to this.
Yeah. Well, I encourage parents to come to Partners for Ethical Care. If you have any questions or concerns, let us know. And I think that there needs to be an effort maybe to make up a reading list of problematic books. Again, this isn't about censorship. I'm not opposed to this book having been published. I'm opposed to pushing it on children. You know, if you want to have this in a library somewhere, in a, you know, section about gender for adults, then no problem, but don't push it on children. I mean, it's just incredibly inappropriate. And I think that that's one of the things that we need to make it clear, is that the other side actively is censoring books they don't like. They're burning them. We're not saying these books should be censored or burned. We're just saying that it's not appropriate to be introducing children to them.
That's a very good point, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. All right. Thanks for this discussion today. We will see you next time.
Thanks, Maria.
Okay, bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.